where there is a constitutional bill, a Section 74 bill in Parliament. The first option we have there is when the Houses refer the processing of the Section 74 bill to a joint committee. In the previous meeting I highlighted in the joint rules, there is an option for the Houses by resolution to refer the processing of the Section 74 bill to a joint committee for processing. That committee is an ad hoc committee and won't in practice be the Constitutional Review Committee, but through such an amendment of Joint Rule 167, then there can be an obligation placed on such an ad hoc joint committee processing a Section 74 constitutional amendment to always consult with the Constitutional Review Committee. There is the possibility of expanding that, because it's not necessarily always going to be a joint committee processing the Constitutional Amendment Bill. In practice, it's usually first the NA Committee and the Justice Committee that deals with it, and then that the Constitutional Amendment Bill is passed on to the NCOP and the similar committee there processing it and reporting back. I spoke to my colleagues in the NA table, and they actually confirmed that the joint processing of committee of a bill, joint processing is rarely used. So for that reason, we then included an option of a consequential amendment to Rule 249 of the Rules of the National Assembly that would allow, when processing a bill, also a similar consultation obligation for the NA committee to then, or then similarly also in Rule 169 of the Rules of the National Council of Provinces, obligation to consult with the Constitutional Review Committee, because nothing in the rules prevents an NA committee or an NCOP committee from consulting with a joint committee. So that can also then strengthen the consultation option if a constitutional amendment bill is not referred to a joint ad hoc committee, but first to the NA and then to the NCOP's relevant committee for report. That is the option that we are tabling, Chairperson, for the proposed consultation strengthening amendment of the rules. The committee also instructed us to look at the possibility of looking at a rules amendment to allow for a more active role in influencing the processing of a constitutional amendment bill. We then looked at the functions and the powers of the committee as outlined in Joint Rule 102, which primarily echoes the Constitution in stating that a committee has an obligation to review the Constitution annually, and it at present only speaks to the call for public submissions. We have proposed a third option there with the functions and powers, where the Constitutional Review Committee must consider any constitutional amendment bill before it is referred to the relevant committee in terms of Rule 261 of the Rules of the National Assembly, and must table a report in the National Assembly and, where applicable, the National Council of Provinces as an annexure to the Constitutional Amendment Bill, commenting on whether the purpose of the bill is in the public interest and cannot be realized by means of an enactment of legislation other than a Constitutional Amendment Bill. By providing for such functions, the committee then puts active consideration into the bill, whether it is necessary, whether to review the Constitution, as the committee then also does with public submissions, looks at whether the proposed amendment is actually in the public interest, whether there is a need. That report then will be seen as part of the package of information that the relevant committee to which the bill is referred for processing must then consider, as it will be an annexure tabled for consideration. So in that aspect, the committee is almost the first process, the first committee in Parliament then to look at the bill, to comment on the bill, and then to pass it on to the next committee to take the process further. As an alternative, I just picked up an error there that I want to point out. If members can just, in the alternative 3, sub A, the words by the JTM, please just delete that. That is a relic from a previous draft. I had a classification referral reference in there. In the alternative, in paragraph, we're on option 2, so it's paragraph 8, yeah. And in the alternative to Rule 102, the sub 3, sub A, if members can just delete the by the JTM. It's here in the, on that section. So the second half of the page. The second, the third amendment. My apologies, that one slipped in. The alternative to the functions and powers amendments that we're proposing is then just actually making it broader. The previous option specifically stated public interest as a consideration, consideration of whether it should be in legislation and not a constitutional amendment, so that clearly states what the committee would be reporting on. Yeah, the second alternative is a more flexible one, perhaps, which merely states that the Constitutional Review Committee must consider any constitutional amendment bill before it is referred to the relevant committee for consideration and must table as an annexure to the constitutional amendment bill the committee's recommendations in the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. So then it is broader, perhaps, in that the committee can recommend as it sees fit without necessary requirements. That then is the two proposals we have there. Similarly, there will be consequential amendments amendments required for Rule 261 of the Rules of the National Assembly in just allowing for the referral of constitutional amendment bills to committees to then state that any constitutional amendment bill must, before it is referred to the committee as contemplated in those rules, be referred to the Constitutional Review Committee, just to allow that the National Assembly rules then speak to the joint rules amendment, and similarly the NCOP rules will also require such a consequential amendment, just to have that obligation that before a relevant committee can then deal, it must be noted that the Constitutional Review Committee's recommendations or report must first be obtained and tabled, just to allow for that flow. Chairperson, that is then just our office's proposed amendment draft. There are no means cast in stone. It's up for the committee to decide whether there are additional issues or interests that must be included. It is obviously a matter that the committee, if members so wish and wish to take it further, will have to report or request from the Joint Rules Committee to look at the issue and to include that. As far as my knowledge goes, the Joint Rules Committee is currently busy with an NA review process, and I think a Joint Rules review process is also scheduled. It is ideal for such amendments to be part of such a general overview process, seeing as there will be consequential issues and the amendment of one rule necessarily has a knock-on effect on another. So it is ideal that it should be in part of such a process if members have that interest. Thank you,
Chairperson.
I just wanted to understand what is the meaning of consider, must consider, you've used the term, must consider any constitutional amendment bill. Does it mean having hearings or does it purely, and I think you alluded to the fact of as we consider public submissions. I'm just trying to understand the process, or do we then decide on what process we want to, should we follow that there must be a consideration by this committee. Do we then have full public hearings or what, or how would you see that in the various options?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Consider usually within the rules, as I understand it, committees have the power to dictate their own internal processes. So unless it is clearly defined in the rules, or if the rules committee wants to add, or members would like to add to put it in or to clarify, I think whatever the committee requires to inform that consideration, members will then be able to stipulate when that is processed, how that is run. There is the practice in Parliament that when a committee is a specialised committee, usually that committee don't deal with the processing of bills and therefore don't necessarily call public hearings. This will be a new, I almost want to say a new venture, a extension, something that has not previously been done. So it will have to, that's something the committee will have to consider. Won't it be duplicating, if it's a call for public hearings, and it's not that the committee will necessarily be doing a clause-by-clause interrogation of the bill. Will it be duplicating what the relevant NA or NCOP committee will be doing when calling public hearing. Perhaps there is a need then to strengthen it with a consultation option that it be called in such a manner that all the that both the Constitutional Review Committee and the NA Committee dealing with it perhaps first have the opportunity to hear the public hearings at the same time, and then the Constitutional Review Committee can table a report. That's something that will practically have to be almost workshopped and decided, because this is something, it's a new issue, and a new, I want to not want to call it a beast, but it needs to be tamed first at the moment. But as far as I know, just the rules allow for committees to dictate practice.
Welcome, Honourable Snell, Advocate Gunn.
All these options seem to be, based upon, more or less based upon the scrutiny of delegated legislation committees' approach to the matter and the rules relating to that. So they are, in a sense, softer options. In the sense that it isn't required that, for example, a motion of desirability is passed by this committee, and that, as Honourable Swart has put it at a previous meeting, that this meeting or this committee almost acts as a sort of a gatekeeper in that sense. Yeah. So why haven't you considered also as an option the motion of desirability kind of option, the gatekeeping option in a sense.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I must admit, I worked with a colleague as well from the drafting unit. So this was our combined putting of heads together and just talking it through. We took into consideration that there is a joint scrutiny committee, but we did not necessarily take theirs and try and carve it and copy it. It was we sat around the table and bounced ideas off one another. And we thought that the request for the comments on a public interest and the comment on whether it can't be enacted through legislation rather than the Constitution was a type of gatekeeping issue, because to comment on whether it is in the public interest is very closely for us being linked to desirability as well. We thought that broad enough. That can be it can be rephrased if committee members want us to look specifically at how the scrutiny committee's rules then can just be tweaked perhaps to fit into this committee. That can be done. But that first option, that first alternative of the alternatives, the number three, was our attempt at a motion of desirability gatekeeping option. So that then failed, but we can redraft it.
Any other questions, comments, honourable members?
Chair, thank you very much. I think this advice from Dr. Lewis is very useful. I think it does capture our objective, because these proposals, option two, the two of them, I think they say exactly what we had in mind, because we are a constitutional committee. It is a committee that has been established by the Constitution to review the Constitution. But we are not required to make, to consider bills to the extent of proposing laws to be passed by the legislative assembly, I mean by Parliament. So something like a motion of desirability or determining whether the proposed amendment is in the public interest, and that therefore that purpose cannot be achieved by any means other than an amendment of the Constitution, is what we need to do. So I think, Chair, we might want to consider which option we want to take, or alternatively, we might just want to leave these two options to be part of our report to be presented to Parliament. And if Parliament approves, then it will be the Rules Committee that decides which of them is best for Parliament. See, these are two options. We can decide now which one we want to take, or we can leave that decision to the Rules Committee so that you don't restrict the Rules Committee. Also, we don't want, if they reject our chosen option, then it would mean then that there's nothing to be done. No amendments to the rules will take place. But if we give them two options, then at least they'll have to choose one which will in any event be desirable to us. But one about the constitutional amendment, I don't think we would even want to forward it to Parliament.
So don't you think perhaps you should the committee say this is what they recommend, but there are just the two options. Now the committee would desire this option.
Chairperson, I want to second the proposal that we send both through in our report.
Leave it with the Rules Committee to make the decision. They might just say, you know, it's not possible because we don't have the capacity to do it, but, you know, we are sort of...
Yeah, my...
It is, oh, well.
It's on now. So
yes, I want to second that if you're sending both.
Agreed.
Yes, I'm in agreement with that in broad terms, except for the fact that that option, it is, what is it, paragraph 6, you know, that seems to me to be a bit too soft, if I can put it that way. Because there is no, in terms of paragraph 6, page 2, paragraph 6, there, you know, then there is no duty at all, or no obligation at all that is indicating that we need to at least look into the matter. It says the committee, when processing the bill, may, or if ordered by the speaker, must consult any other committee. You know, that's a bit... sorry. I see it also says must consult with the Constitutional Review Committee. Okay, sorry. No, I withdraw my comment.
My proposal would be that let's consider the options on page 3.
Yes.
That is option 2C. Yeah. Those two. If we adopt either of them, we shall have to also adopt the points raised in point 9, in the paragraph 9, because they are consequential to whatever option we adopt.
Okay, there's a proposal made up members and seconded by Mr. Koranov. We all agree.
Move over there.
Honourable Ngove, any comments? No comments. Okay, members, then that means we also have to consider the reports that we consider these proposals, the flow from the report that we have, the workshop report. Now that we have gone this and adopted these proposals, not adopted, but we recommend these ones, as we cannot correct at the moment. Can we agree that we will also adopt the report when we do correct, as these flow from the report? Hmm?
I think ideally, Chair. We shall have to, we always have to prepare a report in an event every year, like all committees. A report that is going to report on the submission, on the work that we've done in the committee since last time. And that report will include a report on the various submissions that we've received. It will also include the workshops that we conducted in order to establish exactly what our mandate is and how we're supposed to execute that mandate. It will also then include the conclusion that we have reached, which is that the rules must be amended in accordance with these options that we've agreed on. So it's supposed to be a comprehensive report, but obviously it will have to have highlighted concrete decisions that we've taken that require the intervention of Parliament in the form of either approving or not approving. Am I not right, Honourable Member? Leaving advisor.
Yeah, Chairperson, you're quite correct. Just a step ahead.
Oh.
I was thinking about the workshop report. Remember, we did not adopt the workshop report. As the way we said, the legal advisors must go and look what changes that must stand to the rules. Then we still need to adopt the report formally in the committee. And then we come to the report, my co-chairperson, of which it's a must, it's obligatory for the committee to submit that report.
Yes, I appreciate it. I think the report of the workshop is our own report, isn't it? And having adopted our own report internally, then we submit our conclusion to Parliament for approval or for decision. So yeah, right. Let's look then at the report of the workshop, which has been with us for quite some time. The only reason we didn't conclude deliberation on it was that we discovered that in spite of what our experts had said, there are actually other countries that do have committees that are somewhat similar to ours. And then we required our researchers to look into those countries and advise us as to what their research came up with. Because that's why I imagine that Dr. Lewis is going to present that part of the report, the research. Who should be doing that? I know this paper has been circulated, but I'm not sure if it was actually, was it actually presented? Was it presented? Yes, sir.
Chairperson, I think I did hand over some of my initial research to the research unit. I don't know what the progress in that is. The material that I gathered from Ireland and Finland was included and presented on in the previous opinion that followed that preceded the drafting options. In there, perhaps just to refresh members' memories, we highlighted that Ireland has a committee that deals with a constitutional amendment or reviews that looks at public submissions and reviews and then reports on the possibility of constitutional amendments, and they then having a bicameral system as we do with two houses. We thought that was relevant for further research. Then Finland also has a committee that does constitutional review, but keeping in mind there, we just highlighted that even though they have a committee that does the constitutional reviews, they only have one house, so they're unicameral. They don't have that joint referral or joint processing system that we have, but due to the fact that they also then look at the necessity of constitutional reviews and report on that, and they actually run with constitutional amendment bills, we thought that was necessary to highlight to the research unit perhaps that is also an area that could have benefit for the committee if research is done on that. We did a questionnaire to our office sent a questionnaire through to the representatives of the Irish and Finnish Parliament, in which we asked them what the mandate of their specific committees are. It is in the opinion that I just presented, Chairperson, I put as an annexure my previous opinion as well, and that then has on page 7 I started with the one from Finland, the one from Finland is on page 7 of the previous opinion, and then the questionnaire from Ireland is on page 5. where it basically looks at what the mandate of that of their individual committees are in terms of what rules or constitutional provisions they enforce that mandate, how they liaise with or how they work within their parliamentary system, who they report to, and these are the answers then that I obtained from those representatives are attached for consideration of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Any comments, honourable members? Looks like honourable members need more time. Do honourable members need more time for? But normally they would either say yes to agree with the report or ask questions.
I will say I support the
Can I be set with
which one of these countries do you consider to have something similar to ours?
Not one.
Or something we could read could
not one. Not one. Of course they're not typical constitutional
democracy like that. What about the one of Ireland? Finland rather. Which has the Constitutional Law Committee whose mandate is to examine legislative issues under its jurisdiction. Committee further holds a central role in enforcing the Constitution when laws are enacted, gives statements on the constitutionality and conformity to international human rights treaties of all bills and other issues. Wouldn't that be the kind of work we might be expected to do as this committee? Isn't it that we also want to have an opportunity to go and look and study other countries, how they deal with the review of their constitution? I would think Finland might be the one country we might want to. But then I suppose that would be in the next year.
I'm just concerned on page 8, if you look at the recommendations, 6.3, I'm just concerned, you know, what we have now, what we are now recommending to the Joint Rules Committee and what is indicated there under 6.3, whether that is exact, you know, whether that is talking to each other. Otherwise, we might want to amend and rephrase 6.3 a little bit. It says here that if the CRC is of the view that such an amendment is unwarranted, such bill would be referred back to the drafters to consider the grounds of the rejection and so on and so on. It's not really in line with the proposals we are sending to the Rules Committee, so it's a bit weird if we have a workshop with certain recommendations and then what actually emanates from this committee in terms of what we propose to the Joint Rules Committee is something a little, somewhat different. So maybe 6.3 should just be rephrased.
Now, how does it differ?
No, well, I mean, what we're basically saying in terms of these options that we are sending on now is that we will publish our recommendations and so on. We will say whether it's in the public interest and so on and so on. But it's not a kind of a sort of a gatekeeping situation where we will refer a bill back and not to the Justice Committee, as is phrased here in 6.3. 6.3 basically says a bill comes to us, if we're not in agreement with the bill, we refer it back to the drafters.
Instead of where else would you refer it? Just reject it without... We just reject the bill without any guidance as to what needs to be done about it. like who should consider it. Because the import of this, in my understanding, is that if we agree, if we pass a motion of desirability, it means it will be referred to the relevant parliamentary committee, not just the constitutional review, not just the portfolio committee, because there's the standing committee as well as the portfolio committee. But if we reject it, then this proposal says it goes back to the drafters, whoever presented it to parliament.
Well, I'm saying, that, and this is only my opinion, Chair, is 6.3 is stronger. It's put stronger than the sort of amendments that we are proposing to the Joint Rules Committee. That's all I'm saying. For example, if we look at the one option that we're sending on now, it would say that the Constitutional Review Committee must consider the amendment, must table a report on whether it's in the public interest, whether the objective cannot be realized by means of an enactment of legislation and so on. So we only table a report. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't say in terms of the rules that we are proposing that we can actually reject the bill and send it back to the drafters. There is a huge difference in my view. So all I'm saying is 6.3 and what we are proposing is not the same thing. Otherwise, we must either amend 6.3 as a recommendation, or otherwise we must include something in our proposals that would say that we can reject the bill and send it back to the drafters. That's.
Chairperson, thanks. What I see on option 2, let me go to C. There's 102 there, and then one subsection 123, or in the alternative. And the alternatives in subsection 3, it says the Constitutional Review Committee must consider any constitutional amendment bill by the JTM before it is referred to the relevant committee for consideration, and must table as an annex to the constitutional amendment bill the committee's recommendations in the National Assembly in the country of provinces. And we're saying we're not choosing any. We'll send both options to the JTM.
And we're supposed to delete the word by the JTM.
Okay.
But still the import is the same.
And then this one, the 6.3, no, consideration should be given to the review of the relevant committee. And then our recommendation on 6.3 is that the rules should be amended to facilitate scrutiny by the CRC of any bills that seek to amend the constitution. In the event the CRC is of the view that the amendment is warranted, the bill will be referred to the portfolio committee. The alternative here, to me, it says before it goes to the portfolio committee. So I agree with him in terms of saying either we say in the workshop this is what we saw it, and then after further consultation or discussing the correct options, then it is when we arrived at these two options, which we will then be sending to the Joint Rules Committee for them to choose one or whatever it is. Thanks.
Can I propose on 6.3 that we just delete the second sentence and we just keep the rules should be amended to facilitate scrutiny of the CRC of any bills that seek to amend the Constitution, and then just delete, because we've adopted already that we will send the two alternatives through. And if we delete that, there's no conflict.
That's what I was going to suggest, is that we delete the you just have the first sentence and you could cross-reference, you could say the committee refers to its report recommending various options to rule changes in this regard. Or you can just say, you could just leave it like that, but you need to tie the two reports together. But I wouldn't go into detail because it's not necessarily going to go to the Portfolio Committee on Justice. It could be an educational constitutional amendment, like the 17th constitutional amendment, which is educational. So I think it's valid. That will deal with the objections if we only have the first sentence there. And I don't know if we need to have a cross-reference then to our other report which recommends rule amendments.
It seems as if we're making our life easy, therefore, if we retain only the first sentence in this paragraph. There's no possibility of any contradiction between this report and the resolution we created. Chair, can I, having agreed on that one, can I ask that we look at 6.2 of the recommendation? Parliament should consider dedicating August of each year for the Constitutional Review Committee to fulfill its constitutional obligation of considering all public submissions. I know this is something that was discussed, and so happened I was not in the meeting at the time. What really is the point of this particular recommendation? Is it necessary?
I propose that we delete that as well, that August part, because I don't know where it emanates from. I can't remember.
If I may explain how did it come, it was not at the workshop that since this committee has to fulfill its the constitutional obligation that each year it must consider particular missions and then report. And then because of the committee did not form quorum all the time, and then the table officers from the NA proposed that perhaps we should look into August, because we got submissions in May, we processed the submissions in June, July. Then in August, the committee sees and consider all the submissions and make its report and report to Parliament so that for that year, we're complete with our obligation as required by the Constitution. That's where it comes from. But it's up to members really to adopt it, or we discuss it, or rather discard it.
I think the question of us not correcting may not warrant that. Maybe if we say this, what the implication will then be saying, I'm not sure whether are we saying the whole of August, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because we meet on Friday, to say we should not go to other committees that we attend to. Is that the implication? To say in August we are going to be sitting from Tuesday to Friday dealing with those submissions. Maybe we need to get clarity so that we don't just send it, and then when it is implementation, I will be going to education, I'll be going to wherever it is. So is that the implication that we say August, then we just dedicate it, we were excused from other committees, but we only look into submissions. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
If I may respond, that was the idea that the Constitutional Review Committee work is given priority. If the committee, you might not sit every day, every week, but you might sit perhaps twice a week. So when we see it, the members who serve in the committee are released from other committees to do the work. That was the idea of the thing. Just like you do during the budget process. The finance committee, appropriations committee, they're sitting, and any member who serves that committee, by that time, he or she must be on that committee to finish the process, the PRRT process. that was an idea that was, you know, put to the committee by the staff. Chief staff from the NH.
Yes, Chair, indeed. This question of the quorum does tend to be a problem. I understand that even other joint committees, or even ad hoc committees, have difficulties in meeting because they are required to meet on Friday. But we might want to maybe even include here in our report the recommendation to Parliament that every alternate, say, Wednesday of the week must be dedicated to joint committee work. You see, we meet on Tuesdays and Wednesdays generally, at least in the NA. I don't know in the NCOP.
Yeah.
But then, because Fridays are difficult days, then we just say Parliament says on these days, on these alternate Wednesdays, the work that is going to be done is that of joint committees only, or something like that. Mm. Would that be asking too much of Parliament and other committees? Come.
I would think that would be a better way of dealing with this. That there's a general problem with joint committees, and that we rather deal with it in that way, to say that all, in terms of all joint committees, every other Wednesday or whatever, we give preference to their work, and that it comes from, you know, the speaker side, whoever decides on these kinds of things, and the chair of the National Council of Provinces, that is the general understanding then, in terms of all committees across the board, all joint committees.
Chairperson, that one will be asking too much. Let me make a practical example that at the NCOP you have a cluster of committees, one committee having six or five portfolios, and then you belong also to another cluster. For instance, I'm in a cluster of social education and recreation. Has five departments, and then at the same time in the cluster of social services we have another six departments. So in the alternation on Tuesdays we meet and deal with the clusters of social services, on Wednesdays we meet and deal with the clusters of education and recreation, and then we have WIPARI, and at three we may have a sitting that starts at three. The Wednesday to the NCOP members, it's because of the nature of many committees that we belong to. Thanks.
Then again, if we're going to be given August, which means we are dealing with our work in that month, and thereafter, what do we do? Nothing.
Yeah.
No, the idea was that during that month we'll have committees, we'll have our work, but during that month is that we must produce a report after the public submissions and submit that report to Parliament. Remember, we said the committee will review the constitution. It means after the submissions, we are done submissions, there are other issues that the committee can still further deal with, like reviewing the report. We said we perhaps like to look at the Chapter 9 institutions. No, they are proposed by Dr. Ambrosini. That was the idea.
If you want then to use August as the month in which we dedicate ourselves to considering the submission, can't you simply do it by ourselves? Scheduling every meeting, meeting for every Friday in August. I don't think for that we need Parliament to be involved in it. If that is what we desire for us to be able to do our work properly, we can do it without calling on Parliament to dedicating that month to us. I know it's an important month because it's my best month, but.
Women's month as well. Is 1 month enough to do this volume of work? Because you'll have to look at the volume of work from January to December. There will have to be consultation with the program work to see what is practical possible before we adopt this paragraph.
I think our knee-jerk reaction has been that let us delete that paragraph. But we just wanted to understand the rationale for it being here in the first place, and the chairperson has reminded us the reasoning behind it. Isn't it still our position then that we don't need that paragraph?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need it in a program.
When we
program, we can target August to say we work towards finishing all these things in August, as and when we meet. Sure.
Okay.
I am thinking, why don't we dedicate the evening time? I don't see us. Oh, she's shaking her head. No, she is shaking her head. I don't know whether she's replying on what I'm saying. I was saying, why don't we dedicate at least the evening time? Maybe 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, up until 8 o'clock, if possible, today, the week. I don't know. I'm just thinking. When I'm going, you know, we have a very tight schedule on our select committees during the day. So it won't work.
Now, Chairperson, the speaker's speech debate was calling on, we say at the MA, was calling on meeting up to late hours or in weekends. The appropriation and finance, they utilize that. I'm not sure that they do get paid for overtime. But that's what they do during their BBR or whatever, that period that they do. So we're only meeting from 9 till 12, then we go. And then that's why the accumulation of this work. Thanks. And then some other time we don't correct, we go. So that's the issue. It's just a commitment from ourselves to say, let's meet and do the work, then ensure that we work towards, we could not even, the August one will be the question of the submissions that have been brought in by people in May. But you can deal with them also if we're committed to say on Fridays we're here, and then we do the work. Thanks.
Okay, can leave this discussion for another matter. We're being off the agenda now. I'd like to, honourable members, then we'll adopt the report and the recommendations with the amendments to the report as agreed. When you do correct, especially if you have only 10, you don't correct. But next time you correct, I think we'll adopt.
We're not correcting.
Without much debate.
We are 12. We'll be making it.
He's
here. They're smoking from.
Are we 12?
They're gone.
We are 12 members in there.
We are 10. Aren't you counting the secretary as well?
No.
We are 11. Where is outside there, Honorable Dihaj?
Where is it still smoking?
You want to adopt the report?
Oh, the whip. I've been looking for the chance here for the bus.
Okay, Honourable Mass, we'll adopt the report once we are correct. But I'd like now to give over, move to the next item, we give over to... And the briefing by Advocate Gordon is on the, just after the Brown legislation.
Sorry, sir, before I proceed, if we do form a quorum, when Gum and Snell are here, they are here, so they have not left the meeting.
We have corrected.
So they were here when we were discussing. So we can just adopt. Yeah, because they even appear in the register.
I propose we adopt.
The minutes first.
The minutes first, okay.
Who's the one?
Any second? McKay, any second? And then
are you sure we correct?
Mm.
What is the register saying?
Can we then adopt a report and propose us from
we are 11 in all, yeah?
Yeah,
we are 11. So we're still short of one member. There used to be a time when we... There used to be a time when we could round up any available member of parliament to come and form, help us form a quorum. Advocate Gum, we short of one member.
Oh, one member. Correct.
I think you need to whip up someone. You see, there's this period of the review of the joint rules or the rules of parliament. We don't want to miss out on that. Let us take this decision and send it to parliament. Does it have to go straight to first to parliament before it goes to the joint rules? I suppose it does. I mean, specifically this proposal of the change in the rules, does it have to go to Parliament before it goes to the joint rules? Can't we simply fast-track it to the joint rules, having adopted it as the committee? What's your legal view?
Chair, it's more of a procedural matter, but just if I jog my memory, the committee is going to table the report, the workshop report, in both houses. And for the recommendation or then the decision of the committee to communicate the proposed amendment to the Joint Rules Committee follows from that. I recall when private members did a similar request for an NA Rules amendment, they wrote to the Joint Rules Committee and then sent through a request for a proposed amendment, and I think they even attached the proposed amendment. I can go early haze with the NA table just to make sure, and the NCOP table if the committee so wishes, but my instinct is with the tabling of the report, this is a recommendation. If that recommendation is adopted and approved by the houses, it shouldn't be out of order for the committee to communicate then with the Joint Rules Committee and request a review, specifically seeing as that committee will then already be busy with a review process. It's more or less than almost this committee giving inputs into that process and asking that to be considered as part of it. I don't know if that clarifies or just maybe complicates it.
Yeah, you can just establish whether there's anything prohibiting us from submitting our own proposals to the Joint Rules Committee, even if our report as a whole has not been adopted by Parliament.
Chairperson, I serve on the Joint Rules Committee, and so I think the subcommittee chairperson is also a member of this constitutional review, Advocate Masuka. So we can write to them, in the end it's the Joint Rules Committee that will decide whether they will entertain it. Nothing stops us from writing.
So proposing then that we draft a letter directed to the Joint Rules Committee to
ask them to consider.
Okay.
Well, we did it on that, we did on that basis. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairpersons. Good morning, members. The matter I'll be speaking to this morning is reference committee reference 812. It's a matter that came in with the 2012 submissions, even though the opinion that I'm speaking to this morning is dated 2013. The reason for that, if members can recall, in 2012, when the Legal Services Office presented the legal opinions to this committee, I indicated in committee reference 812 that the chairperson of the NCOP had requested that, or had sent a letter to this committee stating an intention for a request to have cabinet members and deputy ministers afford a constitutional competence to introduce bills in the NCOP. But that letter sent by the chair, by the honourable chairperson, was not amplified. And so this year, the chairperson of the NCOP has further then amplified his request, and it's to that letter, dated 2013, April 2013, to which the legal opinion referenced 134, I think it is, I'll just get the cover. 134.13 speaks to the new letter that came in April this year. The first point, chairpersons, that I'd like to make is that members should keep in mind that what we're essentially dealing with here is Section 76.3 legislation. Before I get into the nuts and bolts about the request, we're not speaking about 74, 75, 77. It's 76.3 legislation, predominantly, that falls within Schedule 4 of the Constitution, and so it's what we would refer to as those bills affecting provinces. The chairperson of the NCOP makes a submission to this committee stating, please, can we look at Section 73.4 of the Constitution for an amendment? Section 73.4 currently states that only a member and committee of the NCOP may introduce a bill in the National Council of Provinces. The chairperson has indicated that there seems to be a bit of a problem with that scenario. One, bills are not being introduced in the NCOP. 76.3 bills are predominantly being introduced in the NA. Secondly, the chairperson expresses a view, and that would be in paragraph 2 of my opinion, remember just a quick synopsis. What the chairperson is saying is that a Schedule 4 bill, a bill affecting provinces, goes through a six-week cycle, which means the NCOP needs some time to effectively consider this legislation. Now, if a 76.3 bill is continuously introduced in the National Assembly as provided for in Section 76.1 of the Constitution, it means that these bills are in the NA for, in some respects, a substantial amount of time. And then it's sent to the NCOP, who has to look at these bills in respect of programming and time and need to adjust programs within the six-week cycle. The chairperson is saying that if these bills are introduced in the NCOP first, that essentially is what Section 76.2 of the Constitution allows for, it will give the NCOP more time to process this legislation and then to be sent to the National Assembly, considering that it's bills affecting provinces. And so that's really the rationale behind the request. Focusing to the actual legal effect of this request, I'm not going to read my opinion verbatim. I think that if members would like to read, they can so do that. I'm just going to extract the synopsis of what the opinion addresses.
Point of order, I got the Honourable Gelderblom here. If we have a quorum now, can we just perhaps deal with the matters that we need to deal with, because he can't stay here for ever more, I understand.
So on the reports,
I think it's an adoption of the report in the minutes or something. I don't think I can keep him here for too long, you know.
Then we're going to go and look for Grant now. But in any event, if the register says there are church members, then we can go ahead. Who are proposing a double of the meeting? Who are going off? And the double of the meeting?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Coming back to the point I was making, I will not be leaving my legal opinion verbatim. I'm just extracting the concept of what the issue is about. So having stated the background for the Chairperson's request and his rationale and why he's asking for Section 73(4) of the Constitution to be amended, I think on that point I need to state that essentially this then focused to an actual constitutional amendment. You know, many of our opinions people write and they're asking amendments to legislation. This is a matter that speaks directly to a constitutional section. So having said that, this is definitely a direct matter that falls within the scope of this committee. Looking at the legal impact of the request, as well as considering the constitution in this matter, I must say that I bumped my head on a couple of occasions and I was quite desperate for information, because it seems that the actual rationale behind Section 73 is not captured in some academic textbook somewhere. And what Section 73 actually of the Constitution does is speak to the introduction of bills in Parliament. The introduction of bills in the National Assembly and the introduction of bills in the NCAP. And if we read Section 73, we can see that in Section 73(2), the introduction of bills in the National Assembly is not limited to members of the NA or the committee, but it's extended to a cabinet member or deputy minister. When we look at 73(4), that cabinet member and deputy minister is expressly excluded. And so it only states that a member or committee of the National Council of Provinces may introduce the bill. Now, I ask myself, why is that so? And I don't have the answer. But what I have tried to look at is look at the constitutional design. There must have been a conscious thought for that exclusion when the Constitution was drafted. The first argument we bounced around was membership. Could introduction of bills be limited to membership of a particular house? And then that argument doesn't hold weight 100%. And the argument against that would be the fact that the executive cabinet members who support the president in an executive function, along with deputy ministers, are afforded an express competence to introduce bills. Now, we know that not all cabinet members and deputy ministers are members of the National Assembly. There are those two outliers that is provided for in the Constitution. The President may appoint two ministers, who are not members of the Assembly, and two deputy ministers. So the argument of membership didn't take me any further, and that's why I didn't include it in the opinion. The rationale, what seems to be effect, is that legislation, in all intents and purposes, is an executive competence. That's the first focal point. Notwithstanding that the NCOP and the NA may introduce and initiate and prepare bills in terms of the Constitution, predominantly 99% of our bills come from the executive, from Cabinet. And so, obviously, the executive had the competence to bring a bill to Parliament. It would be anomalous for an executive to prepare a bill but can't bring it to Parliament. That would just. And so my thinking is that the Constitution is designed on the basis of looking at the national design of government. National executive in relation to national legislature vis-a-vis the National Council of Provinces, which is a council looking at provincial interest in national business. And that essentially is the distinguishing factor. But having said that, I then look at the issue of the Ambrosini judgment. It's in the opinion, I'll just highlight. What the Ambrosini judgment does is, members may be aware of the Ambrosini judgment, for the purpose of the introduction of bills and initiating and preparing legislation. The only extract I draw from the Ambrosini judgment is for the purpose of introduction. The court in the Ambrosini judgment said that when we look at words in the Constitution, they have to have a specific meaning. Words are not in the Constitution just because. And the court looked at whether or not initiate, prepare, and introduction mean the same thing. And the court held that the word introduction should not be read wide enough to include initiate and prepare. The court said initiate and prepare are processes that happen before the introduction. The court further said that introduction is what we would consider to be an announcement, a heralding of a bill at Parliament's doors, placing a document on the table. But the initiation and preparation has already happened. That is why there are specific sections in the Constitution which says the Executive may, the National Assembly may, the NCOP may initiate and prepare legislation in different sections. Then it says that only a member, a cabinet member or deputy minister, member and committee of the NA may introduce in the NA. Then it says member and committee of the NCOP may introduce in the NCOP. Why is that? Clearly because introduction, initiation and prepare are not the same things. So my question to the committee this morning is that, having considered this opinion, I can't find a legal ground to say that the request by the chairperson of the NCOP is unpalatable constitutionally. I'm of the opinion that it's a policy decision, a policy decision on this basis. The question needs to be asked whether or not, considering that there's already a relationship between cabinet members and deputy ministers in respect of the NCOP. Section 66 of the Constitution provides for that relationship where cabinet members and deputy ministers are allowed to participate in the NCOP. They're not members, they cannot vote. But there is that collegial relationship, and I ask myself why. It's because of the fact that the council takes into account provincial interests in national business. So there has to be a relationship with the executive. Section 92 says that the executive is accountable to Parliament. The executive is not accountable to the National Assembly. So clearly the constitutional design favours a relationship between the NCOP and the executive. As I said previously, I don't know what the rationale was when the time the Constitution was drafted for that specific exclusion. We've looked at the certification judgment, we've phoned around, we've phoned a friend, we've been through the academic books. There is no crisp line that says this is the reason for this exclusion. Other than, perhaps, and this is just clearly my thought, that perhaps the members of the NCOP felt that it was within their competence to introduce these bills in a council which takes into account provincial interests. Whether the time has come now, 19 years post-democracy, for that position to change, Chair, that's a decision that this committee needs to make. This committee now needs to decide on a policy decision whether or not Section 73(4) should be amended to insert the words, a cabinet member, deputy minister, member or committee of the council may introduce bills in the council. I also need to add that should that decision be taken, there's no legislative process that changes. The legislative process that will follow from such an amendment is already provided for in Section 76(2) of the Constitution. 76(2) of the Constitution says bills may be introduced in the NCOP. 76(2) piggybacks on 76(3). It's only bills that affect provinces. So further than inserting three words, or four, cabinet member and deputy minister may introduce bills in the NCOP, there are no further constitutional amendments that would be required, as the legislative process is already provided for. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. It's a very extensive, good opinion. I think one of the practical implications or reasons to support this amendment is, if you remember, the traditional courts bill that was introduced in the National Assembly and was referred to the Justice Committee. We immediately referred it to the NCOP, which that bill in particular would have been a good one that could have been introduced via the NCOP process because of the impact it has on traditional courts and, of course, the province. So I think that I don't recall, I was involved in this education process, I don't recall any arguments around this issue, and I presume you've also looked at the committees during the drafting process, if there was anything there as to why there was that specific exclusion, but it doesn't seem to be a major problem. I would support this from a policy perspective, and that cabinet ministers and deputies can introduce bills in the NCOP. Again, it's a process that they must start, a constitutional amendment process that is unlikely to be finished in this term. But who knows? Maybe it could be pushed through quite quickly. But from a policy perspective, just at first glance, I would support this amendment. Thank you, Chair. Subject, of course, to the further amendment, what you have said here in your last paragraph 27, you don't support the proposed amendment because you said it's unnecessary. So we need to look what exactly that wording will be when we do our report finally.
Can I just ask a question out? Does it mean a deputy minister or a minister can introduce any legislation in any NCOP, or can they only do what is specifically linked to provinces? Because that was why the NCOP is there. You know, and then that's the one point. And the second point is, well, with due respect to the NCOP, I think the National Assembly is far more equipped to deal with legislation. That's why it's done like that. You know, we are basically a legislature. And, you know, if you look at all the committees, and you will have specific committees dealing with specific cabinet ministers or departments. And that's why they are better equipped. They're not in a cluster like the NCOP who look after provinces. So I'm not so generous like the Honourable Swart is to allow for this change. But if you say you can introduce any legislation, I will be very cautious to a support.
Can we have Honourable Depierre and then the Advocate?
Chairperson, if we listen carefully to Advocate, this referring to 76 legislation. Introducing 76 legislation in NCOP will expedite and speed up the process of processing the bill, because the six-week cycle includes a negotiating mandate and a final mandate that must be given by provincial legislators, including public hearings, if they so wish, referring to public participation, which is also captured in the Constitution. It's not only provincial legislation, it's also legislation referring to municipalities, local government, the third sphere of government. So it takes it a step further. We are now sitting with legislation that must come through the National Assembly, where the Constitutional Court wants a report on the 9th of September. And we've got a serious problem in terms of time frames. We're sitting with a situation, Chairperson, where legislation was dealt with in May 2012. It was referred to the NCP this week. Then I put a question regarding the referral section in the National Assembly or in the institution as a whole, which has been addressed at several meetings since 2009. So, being in the National Council of Provinces, I support that proposal.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just the one, I believe there's just one question I have to answer in respect of Honourable Kuno was raised. When I started the opinion members, my presentation members will recall I said, for clarity, we're not speaking of Section 74, 75, 77 legislation. We're only speaking to the legislation in referred to in Section 76.3 of the Constitution. And in fact, Section 73.3 of the Constitution provides a bill referred to in Section 76.3, except a bill referred to in subsection 2A and B of the section, may be introduced in the NCOP. So Section 73.3 provides that exclusion, and also when we read Section 76.3, we can see that it's our Schedule 4 bills, and then from A to F, Section 65, that's the voting of the NCOP, local government, Section 182, public protector, 195, 3 and 4, that's public service, 196, public service commission, and Section 197 is also public service. So those are the issues that would fall within that ability to be introduced in the NCOP, but that by itself would be the 76.3 bill. It's already provided for in the institution. It's a legislative mechanism that's currently in place, but we are not speaking to, for the purpose of this amendment, to allow a constitutional competence to a cabinet member and deputy minister to introduce in the NCOP beyond that jurisdiction. Thank you, Chair.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions?
With the fear of sounding...
the sound is a problem.
Yeah, with the fear of sounding a little bit slow. I just want to find out, what would the process be then, once it's been then introduced into the NCRP, I'm assuming it's all on concurrent functions, okay? So it's going to be introduced, it'll go through the process, through the provinces. After that, how does it come back then to the inner?
Chairperson, the procedure is set out in section 76.2 of the Constitution. And 76.2 says when the National Council of Provinces passes a bill referred to in subsection 3. Now, 76.3 would be your Schedule 4 bills predominantly. The bill must be referred to the inner and dealt with in accordance with the following. The bill, when the National Council of Provinces has, and then it goes to the NA. When you look at 76.1, before I get to 76.2, when a bill is introduced in the Assembly takes, for instance, the predominant role on the legislation. It comes to the NCRP. The NCRP then has the competence either to pass with an amendment or reject, and then it will go back to the Assembly and it follows on the procedures. That competence would now be reversed. So the NCRP is the first house, and the NA then takes on the second role. So everything that the NCRP would ordinarily be able to do as a second function, the NA now takes on as a second function. Thank you, Chair.
Any more questions, comments? So anyone proposing the acceptance of this submission? In any event, before that, what do we do? Say you agree with this submission. What is the process? Oh, part of the report. Oh, okay. So I've agreed then that you accept this submission as advised by the legal advisor.
You don't need an explanation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because this would need a constitutional amendment, so therefore we first got to have the rules. We first got to consider it. Because it's a constitutional amendment. Have we now considered it? Does that mean by implication we considered it and it's we scrutinized it? No.
A bill must now come to us, a constitutional amendment bill, so and so.
And then we can reject it then.
Okay, members, it's now 10:30.
Now we are on 5. Submission number 10, 11, and 12. We as the as caucuses or study groups given ourselves an opportunity to look at these submissions so that we can now move towards taking a decision. I seem to know that, if I may confess, that our study group has not had an opportunity to discuss this. We tried to meet yesterday, but very few of us came. Would it be improper if we were to defer item number 5 to the next meeting? Mm-hmm. Seeing that we've done a lot of work. Well, then we see the whole of August. Looks like we are agreed then that we may adjourn now. What's the question?
I have a serious problem. Normally when the NA is sitting and we are having a study group, the NCOP will wait for that. whether they knock off at 6 o'clock or 7, we wait. But with the National Assembly,
yeah, I don't think that's
it's a problem. They don't wait for us. I'm raising it because you said you said you had a study group and you were few. Because you did not wait for us.
You didn't refer to a study group.
Yes.
So we are agreed then that we are then. Okay, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Absolutely.